Yo.
This is the podcast for empathy and imagination.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Podcasts for Empathy and Imagination. This is the show in which we empathize with, reflect upon, converse and chuckle about, imagine, explore, debate, and ponder various topics and possible future directions with you, each other, and our guests. Welcome back, episode 11. My name is Aubrey Cloutier.
And I am Drew Clark.
Okay, what do we got?
Welcome, audience. Thank you for being here. Thanks for your time. We got a nice show for you today. Let's get this thing going.
I agree. Garden update. What do we got going on?
Well, you know, I think the most pressing garden update is your new garden, sir. Can we start with yours?
Huh. Yeah, you know, I took it within my own agency to make some executive decisions within my yard. This is a yard that's shared by 5 units, apartment units. And really, it's just fallen into disrepair. Debris has accumulated throughout the yard. No one really
strange
seems to care.
Sectioning.
Weird
get
sectioning.
A load of photo, yeah.
A lot of old furniture and wood and bags of soil gone unused.
Broken pots, weird chairs, strange places.
Lots of pots.
Big, beautiful yard. Aubrey's home
Huge.
Has a lovely, beautiful side and backyard with big trees and lots of space, but there's no one ever goes there because it's like shared... non-responsibility or something.
Yeah, almost like no one feels like they have the right to modify it because it is shared. So I took it upon myself to modify it. And so I started, you know, put some bricks down, some, you know, made a little basically rock wall. And within that wall, collected all the pots that were in the yard and... Yeah. Basically, just clean things up. Move the wood, you know, old chairs, old furniture, smash it or put it in the corner. Keep the walkways, keep the furniture on the walkways, keep the grass clear.
Yeah.
So that when the guys come to mow the lawn once a month, they can do the, they can get the most done.
Reach the lawn even.
So it's pretty cool. Two neighbors have come up to me and expressed their inspiration from what I've done so far, so that's cool.
Hmm.
And
I had the great joy of helping you with some of this.
Yes.
It was fun to sort of de-weed these old planter pots that are full of great soil with just that they're sitting there.
Yeah, just lying fallow.
So we cleared out the weeds and made some space, and here come the seeds.
So I'm pretty excited. I mean, it's just at the very beginning stages of growing, but the infrastructure is essentially there. So I'm pretty psyched.
Nice.
About it. Thank you for your help.
You're very welcome.
Doing that.
Happy to contribute to a new organic garden.
It's the kind of thing, you know, yard work. It's the kind of thing when it's easier to do it with someone else.
Hmm.
Like cleaning your room or something.
Yeah, or the bathroom, right?
It's almost like, you know, cleaning someone else's room is easier than cleaning your own room.
Huh, yeah, yeah. You think of stuff they didn't think of, maybe.
Yeah, or just you're more motivated for some reason.
Hmm.
Because you're contributing more directly.
Yeah, to someone else. Yeah, that's, I get that.
So that's my garden update.
Okay.
Right at the beginning of my garden update. Your garden is in full bloom, looks like. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, we're at my apartment here, and we can see the garden out the sliding glass doors. My garden update includes multiple new plants. We had the great fortune recently of picking up some cool little seedlings that we are now living in our garden. We got raspberry. We got several different kinds of summer squash. We got yellow sweet corn. We got yellow sweet onions. And they're all, every so far, 100% plant transplant survival so far.
You transplanted the onions?
And I transplanted everything into our garden from a living store-bought kind of little leafy baby plant. So far, everything is still alive, which usually you lose something. Usually I lose something. So far, one of the squash plant's leaves have been completely devoured by snails. So maybe it'll regrow leaves fast enough before the, you know, that's, it's in a dicey spot. I don't, I mean, you know, we'll see.
I can see two snails from where I are, where I am.
Yeah.
Where I are.
There's an, a very large amount of snails, but a good friend of ours, actually a guest on the show, Alex Milankovic, said there's a good rule about 80-20, you know, and if I put, you put in the work, maybe you lose 80, but get, you lose 20, but get 80. And I feel like that's a reasonable experience of my organic garden. I lose 20% to snails and aphids and things, but I'm eating 80%, or I have access to 80% of what's coming up.
How big is the corn going to grow? I mean, can
I'm thinking the sweet yellow corn's going to get taller than me. I'm a little over 6 feet, and it'll probably is get it
gonna,
a little above me.
Yeah, is it going to be able to? Is your garden going to be able to handle that?
It's going to be able to handle it because where I place them, they're not going to be big sun stealers to other things because they're kind of in or out of vicinity of certain different level tiered height plants, like the kale plants I have now are over 6 feet tall, but the strawberry plants of course are 5 inches tall. That's just kind of, and we used to sort of place things smartly, hopefully, to arrange permaculture.
Is that man outsmarting nature? Because in nature the strawberry plant would naturally be overshadowed and allowed to die.
I think plants being mixed around, not having monoculture, is a main element of sustainability. I have mint mixed in with strawberry, mixed in with flowers, mixed in with stuff, because I understand that there is a benefit to having different kinds of plants all around, especially plants that are smelly, like mint and like jasmine. They help keep away certain kinds of bugs, maybe, that wouldn't otherwise deal with the smell.
Mm. Biodiversity,
yeah,
is important.
Biodiversity.
One of the main reasons biodiversity is important is because of medicine.
Yes, like rainforests and medicine. Did you hear that right now different rainforests in different continents than this one are being bulldozed as quickly as they can to be planting palm oil trees? But they're doing it with fire, so they're burning the soil, which that soil has about 6 times as much life and ergo CO2 addition to the scheme than normal soil. So like burning the rare vitamin and medicine filled rainforest, polluting the atmosphere faster and faster every year. You know, it's like, that's a scary thing, right?
It is.
There's other, but yes, and it's like, there are movements now that are growing to great size that are really about things that are uniquely different. And I feel post-scarcity focused.
Mm. Garden update. Cool. Got a little political in the end of that garden update, but that's all right.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we both did, but yeah. Would you be interested in talking about Superbike?
Let's do that. Let's go Superbike for a minute. Aubrey and I often consider if we had the resources and the space to experiment, things that we would do to a bicycle to make it essentially sustainably travelable as possible, right? Like what would be the weight to resource ratio in building a human powered two wheeled machine that, for example, had a miniature solar-powered water creator on board. And the rear wheel was a Copenhagen wheel that could help with hills and recharge downhill.
Right.
And there were a touch button, one button lights for all lights, right? And say, like, we continued this list. This list gets longer and longer, and we begin to tell this narrative of, holy cow, what if we actually could put all this shit on one bike?
On one bike, basically indefinite sustainability. The problem there is growing food on the bike.
Right.
But you essentially, you can be creating water and harvesting energy the whole time that you're riding.
Right. Solar panels and human power and so on and so on are enough to harvest energy for charging GPS, smartphone. It's all completely easy. And now water harvesting without anything besides a small bike adaptable handheld device to create your own water. So essentially, if you've got your, as I call it, a bedroom strapped to your, in one of your panniers, and then in the other pannier you have your other items. You have your tools, you have your clothing, you have your food, you have your you know, extra tube.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, actually. The the metaphor of storage on your bike as rooms in your house.
That's a good metaphor.
And it kind of works out. You have basically your bedroom and maybe your bathroom in the same pannier.
You mean like toothbrush?
Yeah, you have your sleeping bag, hammock, sleeping mat, change of socks, extra pair of boxers or whatnot, and baby wipes.
Yeah.
Toothbrush if you want. That could all fit in one pannier.
Yeah.
Then the other one is like cargo. It's like your garage and your living room. So it's got a lot of it's almost you could almost do without it except for the repair part, but it's got repair parts in it and like entertainment stuff, and it's your kitchen too. So it's your kitchen, living room, garage is your second pannier.
Wow. Yeah.
And even your garage could be just a tail pack or something where you have a spare tube, pump, patch kit. I mean, that's your garage, right? As a bicyclist, cyclist.
I opt for those cylinders of CO2 and then those little converters that connected to the tube as an emergency backup. Those worked for me many times. Only once has it really totally failed.
Those will get you 60% of the way there. With the little pump I have, you can pump your thing all the way up.
That's true.
So your garage is very small. Mm-hmm. But I find that metaphor useful. And
it's a cool way of thinking about what you need.
Your remote and your GPS is obviously your smartphone on the front of your handlebars.
So the super bike is, right now, it's in the beta creation mode. Soon, there will be a detailed, ever-increasing web picture series that will demonstrate the hows and the wheres of where these things will be on this supposed bike. And we'll be building some prototypes when resources are available to do so. Essentially, what if you could ride your bike anywhere you wanted to, and you knew that the things you had with you could have safe sleeping, you could generate water, you could carry food, you could carry repair items, essentially giving you a sort of new form of autonomy? I think really the need I'm really thinking about is autonomy in this way.
Yeah. You're doing less exercise work if you want to, because you have the assist wheel, which you can get engaged, and it's solar recharged. You're constantly harvesting solar energy. You're harvesting moisture from the air. and your fenders are actually gathering moisture as well. If it's raining and solar. You wear like solar panel pauldrons, like a mantle, like a shoulder mantle.
Jacket. Yeah.
Gathers but energy.
Superbike has a super jacket that goes with it.
Yeah. That's the works.
This jacket on the left arm, when you make an L shape with your left arm, the light comes on, say, starboard, right? Mm-hmm. But when you straighten your arm out to make a straight left with your left arm, it's port.
Right.
And so it's a totally LED lit left arm, solar powered jacket.
Totally. And you could even have brake lights.
You could connect that to your brake handles. That wouldn't even be hard.
Would not even be hard. That would be probably the simplest part of it. So it would be cool to see cyclist is in front of you. You're in a car. Cyclist is in front of you. They hit the brakes. You can see them hit the brakes out of the corner of your eye. So you're aware. Safety. Habits.
I look forward to the time when we can work on that in real life. A super bike, I think, could be adaptations to, like, you could maybe upgrade to the one that also tows a small two-wheeled trailer, where its lid roof is a solar panel, and inside is a larger battery that is powering your GPS and lights and all that. So you have a complete sort of homeostasis system that the Copenhagen wheel can collect energy when descending.
Right.
Right. So you have the trailer, you have like maybe a way to wash your clothes, you maybe have more serious food storage, maybe even a slight little chiller for certain kinds of, if it meant the weight was worth it, right? But if you could get these things and you could go anywhere where there was concrete or even a reasonable trail and live autonomously, human powered.
Totally.
Now, if you get into the food, like if you could get the algae growth thing where you could harvest protein, fats, and sugars from an algae that grows from a thing on your bike, it's like...
Yeah.
That's like a spaceship.
The algae dipper, the algae pouch.
You just scoop in with a weird spoon, and it's like salty, fatty,
high protein, carbs... Energy paste. It looks like pesto. Has the consistency of pesto.
Yeah.
Super concentrated algae that's basically flavored through other herbs or whatever.
And of course you have other food because you're encountering other ways of eating. And maybe the trailer folds out into be a small shelter where there's like a hammock, room for a hammock, a table, and a sink. Maybe that's all it was. But you could get out of the rain.
Yeah.
You could put something down, and you could wash something in a sink. That would be, like, pretty cool.
That's all you need, really.
Yeah, if the table could also be, like, a cutting board, and, you know... Maybe you could whiz down the sink. That's up to you. Maybe
why not?
You know? But if it's not, I'm just like, wouldn't that be cool if you could ride around and then have a solar powered lit kind of cabin thing behind your bike?
Yeah.
Where you could like travel comfortably at 10 or 12 miles an hour.
It's like a yacht.
Yeah.
Like a bike powered
endless yacht. Where couldn't you go?
You know what they should have? It'd be cool to have a two wheel drive. So you have a Copenhagen wheel on each wheel.
Ooh, now we're talking.
And they're actually synchronized. So when one, you're going over a hill, for example, one is turning at a different rate than the other. They know at what rate each one is turning and can compensate. You know what I'm saying? Like differential gears between them.
Sounds awesome.
So one can move faster than the other, and they know how to best move in concert.
Huh.
The two wheels.
Sounds great.
The front wheel and the back wheel.
Well, let's write that program.
And they're both...
and put it on the superbike.
Yeah, and they're both electric wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Powered by a battery on the bike, and then in the trailer you would have another battery.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just go. You could just be on your bike for like 12 hours.
Yeah.
What if you could get off?
Your taint would be blasted.
What if you could, the trailer opens up and you can kind of like dismount and like fall into a seat in the trailer of your bike.
While you're moving.
And because the bike has autopilot.
Huh. Well, now you're talking.
It just has the same technology as the self-driving cars. Right?
I mean, sonar, that's GPS, just, radar.
That's just a cluster of sensors and a bunch of programming. That's all it is. So you have that on a bike.
How many Raspberry Pis are in the bike now?
Several.
So, nice.
Or, one, you know, several and one more kick-ass one, probably. Yeah.
It's like, I think the Superbike has like a, what we like to call a warp core. Like a larger milliamp hour USB battery source and half a terabyte hard drive. That's really the thing to do, because then when you're on your travels, when you're recording, however you like to record your travels,
yeah,
you can just save it on your hard drive and recharge your shit at the same time.
That's right.
And then when you get home, your bike, that clips right into your main computer, of course, and it's all streamless and it's great.
In addition to the HD GoPros that are built into the front handlebars and back
cam.
And the seat stem.
Ooh, three
cams. So you always have front and back and HD head. Streams being recorded on your bike. You basically have surveillance footage, you know, like safety footage on your bike, or video, you know, video footage.
Yeah, of whatever you're doing. Maybe you're in a crazy trail. Maybe you're in crazy traffic. Maybe something crazy happens and you caught it.
And the bike actually has Bluetooth. Remember we talked about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it has a battery, CPU, a wireless transmitter, a Bluetooth transmitter.
Well, we're getting that all worked out, you know? It's like we basically just about got that on lockdown. So as our listeners are listening now, if you're going, man, I really want to develop this plan. I've got this space. I just need the talent. Then, you know where to find us. So
some kind of solution to air tires. No more tubes.
You know, there's tubeless now, but that's like glue and stuff.
Hmm.
I think it might be like, maybe the future will have like corrugated rubber. So it'll be like open air tires. But that's heavy, though. That's like really heavy. No one likes heavy.
Hmm. Helium filled.
Yeah, you could lighten it up with helium. You could get thinner rubber, but then the fucking spikes come in, you know? It's like a trade-off. Yeah,
what are you going to carry around? Helium tanks?
Yeah, I think that's one of the technology, like, edges of bikes is, like, tire weight and strength. Because right now we're connecting mostly to concrete.
Hmm.
And then you have to have, like, a little bit of a buffer plus some tread, but...
A trade-off between, you know, surface area and handling.
If you had a tire speed that would never get a flat tire, it would be really, really heavy. And you'd be like, damn, I want a lighter tire.
Yeah.
So then we, you know.
It's true.
Slide down the gradient.
That's pretty much why it's been that the way it is for this long. It's the best solution we have.
Yeah.
The bikes have improved so little. That's how you know they're so great. Like, that, you know, they've, in terms of the design, like the fundamentals of it hasn't really changed.
Yeah.
It's all, now it's just like materials and technology and, you know, different shapes of things. But there's still handlebars, there's still two wheels, there's still pedals.
And a chain.
And a chain.
Yeah.
And gears. It's like, it's so awesome. It's so cool.
We have the Bluetooth wireless shifters now.
Click, click. Yeah. I don't know if I trust that.
Is it worth it? It's so expensive now.
Do I want a million Wi-Fi signals emanating from around my bike? Just give me the mechanical shit, you know? Like,
it's funny.
That, like, stuff works. The stuff that works, you don't need to improve upon it.
And that's a good debate, too. Like, where technology is like when it moves forward, but then there's like sometimes these leaps where it's like, oh, okay, this actually is like 40% better than the old way.
Right.
And it's like you got to be aware of those. But there's a lot of malarkey in between what's working and a really breakthrough like that. So it's like I could see myself getting caught in like, oh yeah, I only want hydraulic disc brakes. That's all I want. And then like that goes on for 20 years and then there's like nano hydrid something brakes. And I'm like, that's malarkey.
Temporal tachyon brakes.
Yeah, tachyon brakes. Okay.
They make it so that they go back in time so that your wheel never moved forward at all.
that's rough.
So that the brake pads never degenerate because they're never, time doesn't advance. So, all right, that's next level. That's next level superbike. That's ultra superbike.
I'm also a TNG fan. Any TNG fans out there?
That's the pan superbike. But yeah, the superbike, it's a possibility. I'm sure versions of it exist.
I think there are closer approximations.
Yeah.
But maybe no final superbike. Maybe it's just the superbike is a narrative that we work towards.
Here's to never getting to the perfect bike.
Right. Cheers to that.
Because give me closer approximations. Give me imperfection.
Yeah.
Any day.
Give me confusion. I want to be confused occasionally.
I'll take it any day over quote-unquote perfection.
All right.
50 flavors of mayonnaise, 50 years of experience. Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Thank you to Final Corp, sponsor of the episodes. This is our 11th episode. And here we are. Thanks again to Final Corp.
Final Corp.
It'll be fine. Oh, yeah, get your guitar.
Okay.
You want to get your guitar? Yeah, you want to do that now?
Yeah, let's do it right now. I'll just grab it and see what happens.
See what happens.
Keep going.
Okay. Drew's taking off his headphones, getting up. Grabbing his primo new guitar. The action is quote-unquote buttery. So I'm going to grab an instrument cable, plug it in here.
Drums to that stuff I was just playing on guitar. I'm like ready for that Kickstarter. Come on.
Thank you. nice.
Huh.
Huh.
See, that was a good idea. That was cool.
Good idea. It's a good idea.
I would do that again later. And not today. I mean, next time. You know what I mean? That's what I mean. You know what I mean.
It's kind of a good, that's a good framework, part of the framework.
Good at guitar. That's just like a good thing to do.
It's fun.
Fun is good.
What else we got? You got any topics?
You had some stuff I really liked, actually.
All right. This is basically the top half of that page was my ideas for episode 11. This is how organized we are.
Nothing.
I wrote a half a page of topics, and Drew's looking at them. Was it not on there?
It's kind of on there.
We mentioned something that I didn't write down.
Okay, so there's this thing I'm curious about, and maybe we can talk about it, and maybe Aubrey, you might have good questions, and maybe I would have weird answers, or maybe I would have weird questions, and you would have good answers. Let's see what happens.
I'm intrigued.
Ready? Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about power structures.
Mm.
So in the corporate world, there's the classic hierarchical CEO top-down deal, except for there's a few kind of emerging alternatives. The one that is probably most known and is recently, a few years ago, adopted by the shoe website Zappos, called Holacracy.
Okay.
Holacracy.
No managers.
Is no managers. Holacracy is non-hierarchical way to organize a group to do a thing.
Hmm.
How it goes is there's a bunch of rules about how meetings go. It's a very defined way, and there's different kinds of meetings and they're for different tasks. The job titles are shifting every 2 weeks. Your task title would change as often as twice a month.
Right.
And it would be adapting to the real world, what was happening. And then everyone has their opportunity to speak about requests in a timely and focused manner. And then you can delegate, we all can share, delegate autonomy on decision making for certain things. Right. You can just say, so-and-so just has autonomy on what we do for social media because they just know what's up, and they're good at it. And they report to us what happens, and we do this in a regular way. And it's all very defined.
Mm.
So it's an interesting way to think about organizing groups without hierarchy. Now, what it requires is the CEO of that company to cede their power into the constitution that they write. There's a constitution. So they cede their power into the Constitution, and then there's a total, supposed, equilateral, non-hierarchical way of organizing people.
So there are guiding principles.
Mm-hmm.
It's the guiding document.
Yeah. Now, I don't know everything about this. I know some things about it, and I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued because I'm restarting a new Zeitgeist Movement chapter here in the East Bay, and I'm hopefully starting my own craft beer bar, Gradient. Hmm. And I'm curious about what the possibilities could be. Could we make something way more humane?
So you're looking for practical ways to organize people in a non-hierarchical way.
Yes.
Hmm. So people just come up with their own job titles?
Yes, and they change. It's almost like they don't come with their own. They sort of present it as an idea.
Right.
Sort of. And then, I don't fully understand it, but it's something a little bit like that. Yeah.
So it's like, I work for Gradient, hey, what do you do? I work for Gradient. What do you do there? Whatever needs doing, kind of.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
see, that's great.
And there's shared rewards. The team finds something valuable that a person did. It's recognizable, and then they can bonus that person. The team does. You don't need CEO to say that. Right. The team chooses that. So if I was came up with this badass way to deal with the trash that just solved hella problems. Say I had my compost bin and recycling bin and trash bin all inside of a sealed greenhouse on the patio where there was a chimney that went 20 feet high in the air and collected the moving air to generate lights at night in the patio.
A wrought iron, airtight cistern of, not really cistern, but a compost, where you increase air pressure and increase heat and use that to feed energy back into the system. Is that what you're talking
about? That's what I'm talking about.
I'm down with that.
Say you had that idea and say it saved the company money and we all got a bigger share in the profit. And then it was agreed, you, like the other team members go like, yeah. So bonus time came around. Drew really came up with a winner plan there. And we want to bonus Drew the certain percentage of that. And then Drew gets something $100. Because my teammates were like, yeah, that was cool.
Right. Well, that's cool. You know, as long as everyone is accepting of each other, I guess. Yeah.
That's the thing is you need to have the bilateral kind of communication. And the idea is there's no managers because everyone manages their own, the thing that they're managing. So it's like you kind of have, it's like hyper autonomy sort of. So instead of a manager like managing seven people doing a few different things, each person has their own sort of duty.
Right.
You know?
I'm on board with that. There's that old adage, if you want to get a play going, don't hire a director because everyone's playing up to the director, right? Everyone's trying to be the star. But if you don't have a director, everyone's just reading the script and getting on with it. Just like getting it done.
Just doing it.
Yeah.
Just doing it. But if there's a director there, they're like, oh.
I'm the prima donna here, you know. I read that once or heard it somewhere.
Well, you are one of them readers, so.
And I think it bears out. Groups want the thing to happen. I guess that's maybe the problem with like riots, mob mentality. Yeah. It turns violent because that's just people want that to happen. People who are doing that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe. There's certain parts of unmet needs that are expressed in ways that seem logical at the time in the state of.
Yeah.
Aggression. Group aggression.
I mean, bands can work with one guy saying, all right, here are the parts.
It can, but usually not for a long time.
Or two guys saying, here,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that can kind of work.
Here a part, like Steely Dan, for example. Two guys writing all the parts.
Nihilotep.
And Nihilotep, right. Comparable in popularity to
except
Steely Dan.
Now, it's Chris.
Pop, yeah. Just as popular as Steely Dan. Maybe a little more popular. you can have, so it does work sometimes to have great leaders or in the band situation. Great leaders saying play the music and people who are participating are like, this is great to play these parts. But then there are also bands who work and thrive on the improvisational model.
It's like, can you get all songs the egos to line up?
Right. Songs are written totally collaboratively.
Hmm.
And each mode works.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they do different things, though.
Yeah.
Like, I've definitely been on the end of doing the writing and then showing the writing to the people and then them learning it is like, they play it with, you know, honor. And there's a difference between, like, when I was playing something and then they jammed their own thing on it and then we play that together live.
Right.
There's, like, a different feeling there, sort of, I think. Or there can be. There can be a different feeling. But
I think that's true.
I've definitely been on both ends. Like, in Battle Elk, I learned a bunch of what Ryan wrote. And then I wrote a bunch of stuff to it. So it was like a shared thing. So I like learned exact stuff. And then I like played other stuff pretty equally. And it's pretty cool. And I was actually talking to him about recording an album. So maybe coming up. Battle Elk.
Battle Elk update.
Probably winter 2000 this year.
2000.
That's probably that.
Yeah, most of the bands I've been in have been the majority collaboration. Or someone will bring in a song, but then the song will be modified because everyone's playing it. And, you know, someone will like make a mistake, but then it'll be, it's like, oh, that's actually kind of cool sounding. Let's make that into a part, you know? So that's why it gives me an imperfection every time. We need the mistakes.
Yeah. It's like that, kind of one take, furious, medium grade recording can be pretty fun.
Yeah.
Or it can be kind of good.
It's true. On a gradient from good to kind of good.
So Aubrey and I have this musical project called It's Kind of Good.
It's Kind of Good. We actually have a bunch of songs. Some of our songs include, you probably have heard these songs, they're on the radio 24/7. Solving Crimes, Taking Point, Smuggler's Kit, A King's Ransom, Bicycle Patrol, Emergent Alternatives, False Records, All Things to All Things, and Ominous Postcard, our biggest hit yet. We just played that one at a Final Corp conference last week. Totally bombed.
Totally bombed.
Totally bombed. But they're still sponsoring the show, so that's good.
Thanks to Final Corp. Oh my gosh. So on the topic previous, the another inertial relation is like power dynamics. And I think this is an interesting topic we could vamp on a bit about what does it really mean? What does it mean, power dynamics between people is what I mean. So when I talk about it, I mean like shared sort of moment-to-moment trading off, like leadership, sort of. And it seems to be a topic of contention, like different relationships. So you talk about a married couple or, say, friends or, say, a brother and a sister or something like that. There's this, you kind of, you know, you can sort of, I guess if I'm describing it, you sort of feel like, are you trying to be the, like, in that relationship, you have information you're trying to share. You're trying to be, like, the one, the decision-making because you're sure that you're right about something. Or are you in a mode where it doesn't matter to you about the decision and the other person can lead about what the kind of new question is? And I think that kind of sharing that back and forth fluidly between, for example, friends, is something that takes practice. And it seems healthy. It seems to be something friendly to the experience.
It seems like a good thing to experience.
Yeah.
Leaves you with a good feeling.
Yeah.
How does that work?
And why is it troublesome from so many people too?
Like relinquishing and taking leadership or fellowship in stride, right? Okay, now I'm going to just fall. But you're not, it's not really conscious so much.
Can we give an example? Do we have an example between you and I where we like have traded back and forth? That might be a good story.
Maybe like bike when we're riding our bikes.
I believe that. Do we have a story we can
bicycles
tell?
Bicycles.
When that happened, maybe?
Nothing specific, but someone gets a flat or something, or directions change.
I could see, like, say that we're coming up on a crossroads, and just like at a certain point, one of us just sort of arrives at it. Let's go this way, with enough energy that the other one just sort of goes okay, right. And we work it out. You know, it's sort of like that's traded.
And I acknowledge, like, maybe it's not the right way. Like, who cares?
Yeah, we're not gonna die.
The fun is that we're riding our bikes.
Yeah.
And going super far.
There's no wrong way.
We're trying to put miles on the odometer.
Right.
Oh, we took a wrong turn.
Like, oh no.
That's actually good.
Yeah.
Gotta tack a couple miles on.
Another quarter mile out of it.
Being willing to relinquish control.
I would also say yes, and being willing to take control.
Yes.
Being willing to take control and relinquish control in the same conversation.
Without a moment's hesitation,
right,
and without ego.
You know, the ego's going to be there.
It's going to be there.
But you can recognize the ego and go, okay, ego, where are you helping? Where are you disrupting this relationship? And kind of guess and work it out and see how it goes. right?
Yeah. If you had to be ahead the whole time.
Ugh. Imagine how horrible
that would be. Imagine how horrible that would be. How unsafe that would be.
I make up many people are stuck in that in their current relationships. Maybe even listening to the show right now. They're like, wait a minute, I lead on all the questions. Where do we go? What do we do? When is it? I answer all those questions. If that's you, raise your right hand.
Or
left hand. Or if you don't have any hands, just smile. That's fine too. Don't do anything. It doesn't matter.
Or even like being ahead, physically. Oh, Drew's ahead of me going downhill. Got to get ahead of him. Got to beat him. I'm the leader. It's like, that's just unsafe at that point. It's not smart.
Yeah, and there's areas where it gets in the way.
And it's an empty purse.
Yeah. You think you're pursuing something, but there's nothing there.
Way better to just go at your own speed.
Yeah. That's like when we're riding, it's like, 70% power. Is a good rule. When you're going up a hill, for example, or if you have straightaway and you're kind of in the high gears, 70% of power is kind of a good rule. Because I can maintain that for hours.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm at 85% power, I can't. It's like, you can't maintain that for hours.
Right.
You can kind of, but the thing is, as you run 70, eventually you're 70, your miles per hour of 70 kind of scoots upward, which is cool. And that's just like kind of one of the fun long game parts of bike camping.
Well, I think our best time was our last trip.
We totally got it. Richmond to Samuel P. Taylor and back.
And I think Picard said this. No, it was Crusher calling out Picard in the episode Attached.
What season?
Season 7. Where the Dr. Crusher and Picard are mentally attached and they know each other's thoughts.
Oh, yeah.
And they come to like a crossroads and Picard's like, yeah, it's this way. And she's like, you don't actually know that that's the way to go. And he's like, well, I just made a decision. And kind of Crusher realizes that's the kind of one of the secrets of command is faking that you know what to do,
Yeah.
Let's go this way. This is the way to go. You have no idea that that's actually the way to go, though.
And that happens a lot. I think if we could just acknowledge that happens. I do that. Sometimes I'm in a leadership role in a group, and this way, okay, let's go.
Right.
And I don't have anything else.
This is what we should do, absolutely. Are you sure?
Yep.
Yep.
Then
you
start going.
Then you go back, and you're like, just spitballing here.
Yeah. That's leadership.
In many ways, it is. Leadership is very much improvisational.
Blind stomping.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I got being vulnerable, I think, maybe.
I think being vulnerable is an important part of leadership. And in dynamics of power and in groups, like trying to organize groups, I think vulnerability is important. That's why one of the main meetings Holacracy begins with is like a check-in, where everyone goes around saying what's distracting them, what's on their mind that's a distraction, and then they go and
clearing the slate.
Basically, it's like a simplified, super simplified clear. Like, what's distracting you? I'm thinking about my kid's softball game that I'm missing right now.
Right. What's distracting you? This meeting. This check-in. This check-in process.
But you're allowed to say anything.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And you should be able to, protest if you must. But protests too much.
I like it.
I think power dynamics could be a good thing to talk about with the guest, too. Maybe we can revisit power dynamics.
It's a deep topic.
How did we come about that? You and me being able to talk about that as a thing, right?
Being vulnerable. Being honest. Being humble. Being strong. A firmness of mind and a gentleness of manner.
Like comfortable, healthy boundaries and an invitation to new ideas. We have a pretty cool existence.
That's true. A lot of first world problems.
My phone isn't something enough.
I'm going to get the new update. That's what people want to do, though. I mean, people want to be looking at their phones.
It's just a normal thing to be about outside to see somebody with a partially shaved head, partially a long hair with a beanie on, wearing like a kind of a suit sort of thing, minus the tie, with an interesting kind of shoes, kind of hunched over, walking, looking down at a phone. That's a really common sight.
True. Kind of makes people more inaccessible, or more seemingly inaccessible. You know, this person's busy. They're doing something on their phone.
And you don't
they
know,
don't want to hear from
you.
You
don't know if they're like trying to fax their lawyer's supposition, or if it's a, like an Bitmoji update about their new smile or haircut or something. You know,
right?
So
they don't want me to say hi to them. They're busy. Sunglasses on, headphones on, totally inaccessible.
Mm-hmm. Would it be cool if we walked around with shirts that said, please say hi to me, and we didn't wear headphones, and we just smiled at everybody?
Yeah. We should film it if we do that.
That reminds me of the love police. That's a tag to put in. The
love police? That's a real thing?
That's a real thing. Cool videos online where they get bullhorns and shout things like, continue consuming.
Mm.
Everything's fine. Do not think about what's happening.
Mm. Ironic.
Consume. Yes. But they're sweet, though. They say nice things, too. It's good.
That's like charming pranks, you know?
I like that.
Positive pranks. Sounds like a new show.
Positive pranks.
Any news of the world?
Yeah, so news of the world is
current events.
Gradient. The Gradient beerbar.com soon to be, or Facebook.com/Gradient bar.
Gradient bar?
Yeah, it's got the septograph as the image of the seven human needs, according to nonviolent communication.
Hmm. And you're honing in on a location now, right?
Right. There's been some exciting changes. You know, of course, I've talked a bit on this podcast about the journey and what I thought was happening, and everything's changed, of course, and it's took way longer, and it's like, it just seems like that's how projects like this go. That's just how they happen.
Mm.
Can you survive long enough through the gauntlet?
Right. That's all it is.
That's pretty much what it is.
Turning and just waiting out the nose.
Mm-hmm. Wait out the nose. No, no, no. Keep going. No, no, no. Keep going.
Maybe, 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 maybe. Yes, no, no, no. Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah. So we're doing that. And There's this thing where El Cerrito doesn't have a master plan for all of its plumbing and sewage and drainage in the city. It's kind of didn't really know what's going on.
Hmm.
So if you want to start a business in El Cerrito, you have to pay for a survey. The fee is $10,000, so they can know what they have.
That's interesting. It's interesting.
It's one way to get money, you know.
Yeah.
It's one way to do it.
Yeah. You know, exploit other people's dreams and aspirations. Skim off the top.
Yeah. So we have to discover some plumbing things. So the Gradient Quest is like plumbing questions. There's so many groups and clubs and cities and counties and teams who care about what is draining where, when, and how much and why. And that's a big deal. Plumbing is
like
the biggest investment in this whole freaking space.
I believe it. Because water is going to become the most scarce resource?
I think it's part of it, but it's also, yes and,
yeah,
that you can pollute stuff weirdly with draining stuff badly.
if you mess up the water table or something.
Well, even groundwater. We got the pipes flowing, like to say the poop water going to the plant where they process the poop water. But if you all also have all the grease fat in the poop water, then that makes the processing the poop harder. So like there's poop in it, it doesn't compost the same. I mean, fat, right? So they gotta like separate that, and they're trying to like work that out. I understand the quest of trying to make it better.
Can we use fat as fuel for like rockets, cars?
We could use it for things. I'm not exactly sure what the best use is, but it could be that burning it. I mean, yeah, it could be.
Like your car runs on, it has a grease trap on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. You could just dump the oil in and it would filter, and that would be on heavy, but, you know, simple.
Why not? If it's so hard to get rid of, can we get rid of it in a better way? Just use it?
So that's the question. So the thing now we're trying to do is get that question answered with the city and Steez Group and East Bay Mud and get a real clear answer on what their requirements are so we can follow all the rules the first time. So that's what we're trying to figure out. And it's not very exciting, but I really hope the next update is like, we sign a lease or something cool like that. So
that would be that would be the next cool step.
That would really be. There's a big party.
Signing a lease.
We sign a lease.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh.
Gradient update. Cool. Thanks again to Final Corp. 50 flavors of mayonnaise, 50 years of experience. These guys have been supporting us now for 11 episodes. Thanks again, and thanks to our listeners.
I'd like to acknowledge you all for taking the time to be here today. Thank you very much for participating. Please comment and share if you'd like to.
Cool. Good episode.
Hey, that was a good one. That was good.